Hey everyone, and welcome to the Creation Podcast, where we discuss the science that confirms scripture. I'm your host, Renee, and you're listening to the fifth episode in a series called The Failures of Old Earth Creationism. This series was voted on by our members and patrons on YouTube and Patreon, so if you'd like to be involved in shaping future series, you can click the link in the description below. Many scientists try to fit old Earth ideology into their beliefs, adopting uniformitarian or evolutionary ideas into their worldview. However, this has major issues logically, scientifically, and theologically. All across the world exists a geological phenomenon known as the Great Unconformity. This erosional surface presents a problem to uniformitarian scientists and old Earth creationists alike. Where did it come from? How is it so remarkably smooth? And what could cause an erosional surface to such a global extent? In today's episode, we'll take a look at the Great Unconformity and unravel the mysteries within its rocks. And joining me is ICR geologist, Dr. Tim Clary. Dr. Clary, it's great to have you on the podcast.
It's always great to be here.
Awesome. Well, today we're talking about a mystery to many evolutionists and to old Earth creationists who, you know, may not acknowledge upward evolution, mm-hmm. but they still, you know, insert deep time into their beliefs. But to start out, I'd love to unpack this term of great unconformity. What exactly is it and where is it found?
Well, the great unconformity is called that. It's been named that for, I think, well over 100 years now. It's because they see a similar surface of erosion. It's really what an unconformity is a surface of erosion. Or sometimes it's a lack of deposition, so it gets a little confusing. In this case, we usually see physical evidence of erosion. Some of the rock particles in the lower section below this so-called erosional surface are often found in the rocks above that were deposited on top of it. And so what it is this big erosional surface on in every continent. Every continent of the world, as far as we can tell, even Antarctica, has this great unconformity. And that's why it's called that. It often is where the fossil-rich rocks start appearing. And so as a creationist, a young Earth creationist, we believe this often marks the beginnings of the flood rocks. In some cases, it's below that. There's another whole story, another whole talk we could give on that. But in many places, it shows crystalline rock, crystalline crustal rock, and then above that are sedimentary rocks that contain fossils. And the amazing thing is, again, it's found on every continent and marks supposedly sometimes up to a billion years of conventional time missing. Whereas young Earth creationists, we don't really accept that idea. But the idea is this, it's uniform in terms of where it's found everywhere. And it's often very flat, as you mentioned, I think, in your intro. Mm-hmm. Some of the old Earth creationists and the conventional geologists, old Earth geologists, they believe there's a few little bumps here and there. And there are. And they exaggerate those. But when you look at places like Grand Canyon, you'll see is at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, you'll see the sedimentary layers going down, going down, going down. And as you see those layers, eventually you see almost a perfectly flat surface from the rim. Anyway, it looks perfectly flat. There's a few little bumps here and there because some of the rock it was eroding on was a little more resistant than the other. But in many cases, it really is uniformly flat. And that surface goes across the country. We can find it in not only Grand Canyon, we can find it in Cody, Wyoming. We can find it in Colorado Springs. You can find it up in Minnesota. But in some cases, it isn't always the same layer on the crystalline rock. You may get younger layers, and that goes back to the flood story, the progression of the flood. So it's kind of confusing because geology students, I think, get confused. It's not always Precambrian with the Cambrian sediments. That's what most people believe because that's where they've identified it. Sometimes these rocks are anywhere you have sediments on top of essentially Precambrian, what they call Precambrian, which in many cases, it can be crystalline rock, or it could be Precambrian sediments, like in Grand Canyon. Eastern Grand Canyon, you've got the Great Unconformity rests Cambrian sediments on top of Precambrian sediments. Western Grand Canyon, it's the Cambrian sandstones on top of crystalline Precambrian. It's somewhat confusing. I mean, you almost need to show some diagrams of things, I think, at times to map it out, but it's what's wonderful about it, I guess, in some ways, is it's so universal. It's every continent, and they always show this very, very flat surface.
Mm. So it's a flat surface, and underneath are those rocks from the beginning of, like, the creation week, and then everything above is from the flood? Is that kind of what marks the distinction between the two?
In many cases, that's true. But some cases, some of that Precambrian sediment, maybe from the earliest part of the flood as well. Those are kind of localized, but what's, you know, most of the time the granite conformity marks, you know, Cambrian or younger rocks on top of Precambrian. So again, as the flood progressed, say across to Minnesota from the edge of the continents, at that point the water had to get high enough that you're really putting Cretaceous right on top of the crystalline Precambrian basement. And so it isn't always Cambrian on top of the Precambrian crystalline basement or Precambrian in general. And so that's what makes it somewhat confusing. If you look up, you know, trying to get a definition of the great unconformity, it's very, very difficult to find. And so I think it's anytime you have sediments, particularly fossil-bearing sediments, so Cambrian or younger sediments deposited in the flood on top of Precambrian rocks, whether it's Precambrian crystalline rock or Precambrian sedimentary rock. Mm. That's the best definition I can come up with for it. Mm. But in Grand Canyon and other places, it's Precambrian rock with the Tapete sandstone and Cambrian Tapete sandstone on top of that. And that marks the beginning of the flood in most places. Mm. Yeah, everybody pretty much agrees. But the old earth guys, you know, and gals, they disagree. And they think that's, it's all part of they accept the old earth paradigm. They accept the millions of years, billions of years. And so they think that the great unconformity is not a big deal, but it really is, as we'll talk a little bit more about.
Mm. So how do those old earth scientists, evolutionary scientists, how do they say the great unconformity happened if not from a global flood?
Yeah, how do you get a flat surface all over the world at about the same time and progresses upward? You know, for them, it's difficult to do. They've come up with some ideas. One of them is recent ideas that they think the whole world was glaciated through the snowball earth, I guess, that's out there with some, you know, sketchy data to support it, to say everything was eroded by glaciers. But you don't see that today. You go to Canada and you see the crystalline rock exposed up there that was glaciated, and you see all sorts of, you know, valleys and rills and gullies. The Precambrian today is not flat. Nowhere in the world do you get flat surfaces that are almost perfectly flat. Now, the old earth geologist that wrote this book, The Grand Canyon Monument to an Ancient Earth, which is for sale in Grand Canyon's bookshop, sadly. Mm-hmm. They don't let us sell our young earth stuff, but because they accept the old earth paradigms, they're able to sell this. And many of these are old earth, you know, Christians, but they're old earth creationists, if you want to call them that. They believe the earth is old, but they believe, you know, there's God. There's many of them are Christians as well. But these, some of them aren't. But they wrote this book kind of a rebuttal to the work that was done by Steve Austin here at ICR, and he showed that, you know, Grand Canyon is a monument to a global flood, to a catastrophe. Mm-hmm. But they take the great unconformity and they try to show there's bumps in it. And there are a few little bumps, but for the most part, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's nearly perfectly flat in planar surface. So it's for them to explain, and you know, what you see in where you have exposures today of Precambrian rock, you don't see it flat. You see undulations and, you know, big hills up and down, not just a couple little bumps here and there. Mm. And so they are struggling trying to explain their great unconformity. It's one of those big mysteries of geology that's, I could get quote after quote after quote of people trying to explain the great unconformity. They really don't have an explanation because you don't see it happening today. Mm. And, you know, the old earth creationists, the old earth scientists in general, they don't have a way to say, well, you know, today's uniformitarianism, they're supposed to say, you know, the present is the key of the past. Well, we don't see this happening at present. We don't see these flat surfaces that were formed as an erosional boundary, and then you have sediments piled on top very, very quickly. It implies you had rapid deposition because you have a flat surface that was planed off by some sort of water erosion action, and then immediately, before you could carve gullies and valleys, you had deposition. And that fits with the flood model. Doesn't fit with the old earth model where you're looking at maybe a billion years of time or a half a billion years of time, depending on where you are, between the, you know, the exposed crystalline rock and those sediments on top. So the big mystery is, how do you have these flat surfaces form all over the world? Mm. And it's, you know, the great unconformity, it's capitalized great unconformity because it is basically a worldwide phenomenon. Mm. But there's many other unconformities as well that go up the rock record that they recognize. Between every mega sequence I work on, there's some type of unconformity between the sediments, and yet we see flat sediments on flat sediments on flat sediments, Natalie, in Grand Canyon above the great unconformity, But you see those across the world. I look at the cores and the columns across from Grand Canyon all the way across the United States. You see those rocks are flat. They're just all across the country. There are places where the mountains pushed up and folded them, sometimes later in the flood. But they're, again, the layers between are folded up. If there was unconformity, they're folded as well. Mm. And so there's really not much evidence of erosion for any of these unconformities that they talk about, and starting with the Great Unconformity.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that basically if this really did form 1.2 billion years ago, we would see like these huge rivets of valleys, of gullies, of evidence that it was exposed for a long period of time before other layers were stacked on top.
And as I mentioned, you can look, go up to Canada and you can see the Canadian Shield, they call it, which is the exposed crystalline rock, which is, you know, the bottom part of the Great Unconformity where it begins. And you don't see, and this is, you know, they even believe this was 10,000 years ago when the glaciers melted away. You know, we would say more like 4,000, but you still see huge valleys and hills, and you know, the glaciers did a lot of erosion. It is, and they didn't do it flat. So if you try to say the Earth was a big snowball Earth and it was all caused by that, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit what we see today. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. It's the best explanation still is erosion from the flood, these massive waves coming across the continents, eroding and then depositing as these waves came in. And that, to me, that's the best explanation for the Great Unconformity and all the unconformities that we see between these layers, waves coming in and washing back out, waves coming in and washing back out. And occasionally you may get something that looks like a little channel here and there. These authors in here point out two channels, which is what all you ever see in Grand Canyon, are two channels. Mm-hmm. One's between two sedimentary layers, and there's a couple little undulations in, you know, a couple of bumps of more resistant Precambrian rock in a place or two as well. But again, there's no satisfactory explanation in the old Earth paradigm to explain the Great Unconformity. And so that, to them, is still a big mystery.
Yeah, and so you mentioned the idea of snowball Earth, you know, as a possible explanation conventionally for them to try and defend their position. Generally, do they all agree that that's probably what caused the Great Unconformity, or are they even divided across their
They're pretty divided on things. I mean, I think there's a lot of people don't think about it. You know, they're not taught. They just, when they're going to school, you just talk about it. Oh, this is the Great Unconformity, and look, you can go over here, you can touch these two rocks above and below, and there's a billion years of time missing, and then you walk away and like, wow, that's cool. And but nobody explains, well, how did you get that surface there? Why is the surface so flat as far as I can see across Grand Canyon or wherever you can see it? And they don't address that.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
All the big questions in geology, they just kind of, they don't delve into those, and so people aren't thinking about it. Most geology students just like, yeah, the Great Unconformity is the sediments on top of Precambrian. That's all they think about. They don't really realize that the evidence that they're right before them points you to the flood, points you to a catastrophic erosion on a massive scale and catastrophic deposition on a massive scale. And that's why these things look so flat. So starting at the Great Unconformity and working your way up through all those unconformities that where there's supposed to be lots of missing time or millions of years missing, there's no evidence of any of that. It's just like bricks on a wall. Like in our studio here, we see the big bricks behind us. Just layer after layer after layer. That's the rock record that we see in the world today. And that rock record fits the global flood.
Which is so interesting because, you know, as you mentioned, like even conventional geologists acknowledge, you know, the flatness of those stacked layers, even if they say there's like little, you know, rivets and whatnot. But I'm even thinking of whenever I've been to Grand Canyon and they have like that trail of time where it's supposedly walking you through like millions and billions of years of history. And I remember there was like this, I guess this visual, this model they have, if you will, of all these rock layers, and they're all stacked flat in their model. And they're saying, look, this demonstrates millions and billions of years of, you know, deposition and erosion. And yet they're all stacked like pancakes on top of
And that's what you see in the books. You can look through these books, they show the same thing. That's what the rocks show. And so they can't really change what the rocks show. They just have to kind of say, well, there's millions of years of time missing here, millions of years of time missing here. 160 million here, you know, 1 million here. And again, they never address where's the erosion. Even in this book, they don't really address the flatness that I could see anywhere by looking through it again really quickly before our little talk. there are other places where they try to do that, but they try to exaggerate the little bumps in it. That's about all they do. Their diagrams show the bumps, you know, much more dramatically than what you see in reality. But they do, like you pointed out, they do show usually fairly representative models. They show the flat layers just like they're bricks in the wall. but they don't really offer an explanation of why are there not gullies? You know, why are there? Why is there millions of years? You don't see that today. Mm-hmm. Again, their whole model is uniformitarianism, where everything's uniform. The present is the key of the past. Why don't we see erosion like we see today in the surface? You know, mm-hmm. Everywhere you look, there's rivers, there's gullies, even the ocean. You know, you've got waves coming in, eroding things, mm-hmm. and it's not always flat. And yet we see these pretty planar surfaces, maybe not perfectly flat, but pretty planar surfaces. Sometimes it's even hard to tell there's an erosion there. Sometimes they have to identify unconformities in the rocks because fossils are suddenly missing that are found somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Those are called disconformities. Mm-hmm. And those are the most difficult to tell. Is that just a hiatus or just, you know, lack of deposition? Or is there really erosion there? Because often there's no evidence of any erosion. Mm-hmm. With the great unconformity, we see there's erosion. We see the surface has been planed down mm-hmm. by some sort of rapid erosion action. And creationists are divided a little bit how that happened as well. We do tie it to the flood, but sometimes people wonder, is it from, you know, waves coming in? Was there some sort of erosion first from all mm-hmm. the 40 days of rain? People have put that forth, that idea. Others have said it's from, you know, the waves coming from the flood. I kind of lean towards that you're eroding kind of as you're depositing right behind it. And so exactly how it works, we need to do more studies. You know, we don't have all the answers either. Mm-hmm. We do need a few more creation scientists working on like flume experiments mm-hmm. and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think we're on the right track to explain what we see in the rock record today, to me, is best explained by the flood, not by mm-hmm. old earth processes eroding away for a billion years or half billion years and leaving a flat surface. That just doesn't make sense with mm-hmm. what we see in the world today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, even if we don't know exactly how that erosion mm-hmm. happened, we know that these layers can be deposited mm-hmm. really quickly. And that's demonstrated mm-hmm. even by things like Mount St. Helens, mm-hmm. where, you know, those mm-hmm. formed in hours, you know, and just right. like so quickly.
And Mount St. Helens also shows we can erode fast. You mm-hmm. know, you can, in 1982, the second eruption melted all the ice and it came roaring down and it formed a 140-foot canyon, which is, people say, is 1/40th of Grand Canyon in a matter of hours. Right, and some of that was solid rock. And so water is a very, very powerful and very heavy moving force. And so, you know, water, when you pick up a gallon of milk or, you know, a gallon of water, it's fairly heavy. Mm-hmm. And so if that hits you, you know, there's a lot of force behind it. So tsunami waves, which were generally, we believe, mm-hmm. in the rapid plate movement of the flood, really started kicking into gear when you start to deposit that first sequence, the Cambrian rocks, which is part of the mega sequence called the Salk mega sequence. And so you might have had some earlier breaking of the fountains of the Great Deep, bursting that might be part of the explanation for the sediments below the Tapeat Sandstone and Grand Canyon. And the tilting, you're on the edge of the continent at the time. That may be what's causing that. That's something we need to look into more as well. Mm-hmm. But we do, pretty much all creationists agree that once you start getting the Cambrian out there, the bottom of the Salk mega sequence, the Tapeat Sandstone and Grand Canyon, and its equivalents across the country and across the world. See, it isn't, I guess I didn't express that enough, but these same sandstone layers are not only found in Grand Canyon, but they're found across the world. Mm-hmm. And so many of the same limestone layers are found across the world mm-hmm. all at the same time. So not only is the Great Unconformity a global event, but many of these rock layers are global as well. And you can make out certain chalk layers on almost every continent mm-hmm. in one of the upper mega sequences, which traditionally, it's called the Cretaceous, but we would call it the Zuni mega sequence. Mm. And that's near the high point of the flood in our interpretation of our column data that we've looked at. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing how global everything is.
Yeah, almost like it was formed by a global flood or something, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. We see this progressive flood, and that's why sometimes the Great Unconformity shows Cretaceous sediments or those Zuni or near the high point of the flood sediments, mm-hmm. Zuni mega sequence sediments on top of the crystalline basement, like we see in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And Royal Gorge, Colorado, for example, where I did my dissertation, you see Jurassic sediments sitting right on top that contain dinosaurs in some cases, mm-hmm. right on top of the crystalline basement. So there are places that didn't flood early on in the flood, but it's still the Great Unconformity because you still have sediments on top of Precambrian rock. Mm-hmm. So when you piece it all together, the best explanation for all we see seems to be the global flood.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Cambrian rock layer, and that calls to mind the Cambrian explosion, which we've talked a lot about, written a lot about at ICR. Can you explain how that relates just to the great unconformity and even how uniformitarians try to explain the sudden appearance of fossils?
Well, that's kind of, there's almost two mysteries wrapped in one. When the great unconformity is the Cambrian rocks on top of the Precambrian rock, that's that surface in between, or would be the unconformity, the erosional surface. Then you have the coincidence of the great unconformity with the Cambrian explosion, because the Cambrian marks the boundary around the world where you see the first prolific amounts of multicellular, if you want to call it that, fossils, or hard-shelled fossils, suddenly show up all over the world. And most of those early fossils are brachiopods, these animals similar to clams, but a little different. And then you also see trilobites, which is arthropods, these little critters that sometimes they're pretty big that crawled around apparently near the bottom of the oceans. And we see their trails in Grand Canyon in the Cambrian. But the Cambrian is significant because that's the boundary of where you first see that. And so if you have the Cambrian, that's why it's called the Cambrian explosion. It's like an explosion of life. Suddenly you have all major animal phyla suddenly show up. And below that, there's almost nothing. So it's just mostly marine algae fossils at best. Few other little tiny little things, and all of a sudden, boom, there's trilobites with complete compound eyes. And evolutionists have looked, they've tried to find in those rocks just below that, into the Precambrian, look for things that are similar in the Precambrian sediments where we have those, and they find nothing. And so they've written up reports saying, well, it's just like they just appear. And that's what that's what the explosion is all about. Other old Earth scientists try to downplay the explosion. They try to say, well, this happened over, 10, 20 million years. How's that an explosion? But, still they don't have any ancestors down below. They just suddenly everything shows up. And it's mostly in the Cambrian where you suddenly see all the major animal phyla. They're mostly marine at that point because our interpretation at ICR is you're only flooding probably shallow seas at that point of the flood, even early in the flood year. So you're only looking at mostly marine fossils. But nonetheless, all of a sudden, boom, there's no fossils, and then boom, prolific fossils. And it is like an explosion. And in many places, that coincides with the great unconformity. To me, it's like two mysteries in one that neither can be explained by the conventional geology community or by the old Earth creationists. They can't really explain that either. They don't want to mention a flood. If they have a flood, they mention just a local flood. In the Middle East or something like that, where, but why did the birds get on the ark? If it's a local flood, they could have flown away. God specifically mentions birds in Genesis that, were brought to the ark. And, Noah could have moved. If he had 80 to 100 years to build the ark, he could have moved. And so it taken, like Jesus moved when Herod was killing all the young children, all the young males. God sent them off to Egypt and they moved away. They could have easily moved away to the Middle East, walked for hundreds of miles away and avoided the so-called local flood. But all indicators of the Bible tell us it was a global flood. All the geology that I've looked at in my career talk about screams a global flood. And the Great Unconformity in many places is the start of that, where you have crystalline basement or sometimes Precambrian sediments, and then suddenly you're looking at flood sediments. Doesn't matter what layer it is, but it's universal, and that's why it's called the Great Unconformity. It is kind of cool when it lines up with the, the Cambrian explosion, when you have the Cambrian on top of the Precambrian, and then all of a sudden there's no fossils, and boom, there's all these fossils. And again, neither one of those, you can look it up. You can look this up at home, kids. Neither one of those is can be explained by the old Earth models.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, if it was just a local flood, that would explain the global extent, not just of the Great Unconformity, but of all these rock layers across the rock record. And even, evolution, if all these complex creatures like trilobites are showing up suddenly in Cambrian rocks, we would expect to see, less complex, less complicated forms below that. And we just don't find those. No one does.
Right. That's what they struggle with that. They're trying to explain where these things came from. It's almost like they just suddenly appeared. And so the name, Great Unconformity is very appropriate because it's the first real erosional boundary that shows it's universal on all the continents. It's starting to show Precambrian, and all of a sudden you've got sediments or of some sort. In this case, you also see Cambrian But it's the same sort of rocks all over the world. The more I look at the rocks of the world, the more universal this story is, that you see layer after layer, and many times those unconformities, those unconformities don't really represent vast amounts of time. They may just be where waves are coming in and waves are walking back, and they washed a little bit of erosion as they went out.
It's like different pulses.
And that's why you see that they're nearly flat, because you're depositing flat layers and you're eroding kind of huge sheets of water. That explains the great unconformity better, is these huge sheets of water, huge sheets of erosion coming in, eroding as these waves, almost like tsunamis coming in. Tremendous amount of energy behind them, tremendous amounts of weight. Tsunamis can move huge concrete embayments. They can move all sorts of things. The force of water is just tremendous. It can erode away sediments. It can create sediments. It's water is nothing to be. You can't tackle water. The big wave of water coming in, tsunamis are coming in.
Yeah.
You need to be at high elevation above where that wave's going to hit. That's your only hope. Mm. It's going to take away the vegetation, houses, anything in its path. It starts to shove all that in. It slows down as it comes across the land because of the friction, but it's still, there's no, your only hope to survive a tsunami is you need to be at high elevation before you see the wave coming in. And these types of waves, even more massive than that, some of these might have been 500-foot high waves or more during the flood year. We see evidence in the rocks of these structures and the sediments that indicate the rocks were even bigger than what we see today in tsunamis, maybe 100-foot high at the biggest, or 50-foot high, and those can kill hundreds of thousands of people living in the coastal areas, which like they did in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But during the flood year, those waves just kept coming in higher and higher and higher, and that's what we see in the rocks. The greater conformity kind of progresses upward from the Precambrian and Cambrian to Precambrian and say Jurassic, or you know, these other upper sedimentary layers that but it's that progression of the flood that we see all over the world as well, which explains the progression of the sort of great unconformity. But it's something that's kind of complex, but yet it's universal. And so the great unconformity, the Cambrian explosion, again, in many places they coincide because of it was a universal process happening on every continent at the same time all over the world. To me, it's you know, that's the validity of the so-called geologic column. Is it's the same record on every continent at the same time all over the world, and we see the same sedimentary order, the same beginnings, which is the great unconformity in many cases, of these flood sediments all over the world in the same general order at the same time. So how is that not a global flood? And I ask old Earth geologists this. I ask old Earth Christians this. How do you explain what I see? And they say, well, Tim, we like your data. You know, because the data is real. It's the rocks that are there today. But they don't like my interpretation. But then they don't offer another alternative. You know, it's pretty much silence to explain the universal global nature of what I'm seeing. And the great unconformity is kind of the beginning of it all. Yeah, that's the bottom layer. Above that, you start to see flood sediments. Again, to qualify that, in some places, there are some sediments locally that may be earlier in the flood, but this is the, you know, the Precambrian, Cambrian is the traditional great unconformity. And that's where you start to push these waves across the continents. That really, so you really started moving the plates at that point, we believe, and you start to make tsunami waves, maybe hundreds of them a day, pushing across the continents. And so the higher they went, of course, that surface, that erosional surface went higher and higher as well, depositing a little bit younger sediments until the water went over the top. And then we have areas exposed today like Canada that's just crystalline rock, or Brazil or Southern Africa or India, a lot of crystalline rock right at the surface, the so-called shield areas of the world, the Canadian shield, they call it, where you actually have crust right at the surface. But again, you look at that surface. I challenge anybody to look at it. It's not flat. It's not what we see in the bottom of Grand Canyon where you look across the rim and you look across where the bottom of the sediments are, and it's almost perfectly flat. A little bump here and there. But these books, their cartoons exaggerate those bumps into huge, huge, huge things. But that's not what the rocks show. The rocks, you look at it for yourself. You know, you can, again, I challenge people to go to Grand Canyon and look. If you can find the Tapete sandstone down there, where's the bumps? You know, from a distance, you can't see them at all. Up close, you may see a few little bumps that might be 5 or 10 feet high in a few places. But for the most part, it's very, very planar. To me, indicates rapid erosion and then rapid deposition right on top of that. And again, the flood, the global flood fits that model because it's so universal, so global of a feature that there's no better explanation than the flood.
Yeah, I mean, both the rocks and the fossils cry out evidence of a flood. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned even the Cambrian specifically, that we have these marine organisms. Mm-hmm. And so could you explain a little bit about that progressive flood model as far as the creatures and the order of burial that we see in the rocks?
Well, what we see is we do see what I call a progressive flood, because the flood didn't flood everything right away, it appears. When I look at the geology of the world, and North America included, you see certain areas only flooded in the first few mega sequences, or early in the flood, or early in the sediments, from, say, Cambrian through Mississippi and those traditional names out there. Mm-hmm. And so these rocks that contain almost exclusively marine fossils, but they're only deposited in the same areas over and over and over. So you see like a pancake stacking of these limited areas. And then later you see, as the water, as the sediments got thicker, you see suddenly there's more coverage. And then those next layers, there's more coverage. And eventually that's why you get the Great Inconformity in Minnesota is, you know, Zuni, it's the fifth mega sequence. It's Cretaceous rocks sitting right at the top of the basement, because those areas didn't flood until later in the flood year, when the floodwaters are about to reach their peak. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where you can see then everything went over the top. There's even remnants of sediments up in the Precambrian and in the middle of Canada, which I call the bathtub ring. That would still be the Great Inconformity. And whatever those sediments are, in this case, it's oftentimes it's Cretaceous again, or Zuni deposits. And so that's, to me, that's the high point of the flood. But you see that everywhere in the world. It's progressive, because you're making, just another whole talk in itself, we believe you're making seafloor really quickly during the flood year, moving the plates really quickly during the flood year. It's called catastrophic plate tectonics, and that process pushes up seafloor. The more you make, the more it pushes up, because it's new and hot. It's like hot air balloons rising from the bottom of the ocean. So the ocean keeps rising. The more you make, the more it pushes up. And where's the water going to go? Mm-hmm. Just like your bathtub coming up in the bottom, it's got to go over the top. And so it kept going higher and higher progressively. And the Bible talks about that their floodwaters reached their peak at day 150. Mm-hmm. So the fossils, the rocks don't reflect immediate coverage, because you only see a limited areas early. It's the same areas over and over, stacked like pancakes, and then you see more. The pancakes suddenly get bigger, and they cover not only those early areas, but they cover new areas, and they cover progressively more. And where you see the peak is the fifth mega sequence, called the Zuni mega sequence. That's about where you have the Cretaceous, top of the Cretaceous layers. And at that point, day 150 of the flood, we believe, because you see the maximum surface coverage globally, you see the maximum volume globally, for the most part, of how thick those sediments were. And to me, that indicates this is the maximum level. And then we believe the next phase after that, after the KEPG, so to speak, that's when you start to recede. Mm-hmm. And so the KEPG, or the KT boundary used to be called, that's kind of the high point of the flood, and maybe just above that. And then the water started to recede, and you see a lot of sediment shedding from these mountains that were rising at that point, and you see a lot of sediment being shoved into the oceans. Mm-hmm. And so there's a reversal of water rising, progressing higher and higher to suddenly reversing. It wasn't until around day 314, from day 150 to 314, we think that it took that long for the water to recede, according to Genesis 8:13, I think, and 14, where even before they got out the ark, they looked out, Noah looked out, the earth was dry. And so we think that's day 314. And then they stayed on the ark a little bit longer, waiting for vegetation to grow, probably. God knew what he was doing, amazingly. And he kept them on there because all the food is on the ark. And if there's no food out there to eat, why let the animals off? So finally, day 371 or thereabouts, he said, open the doors, let them out. Mm-hmm. And so the animals were able to get out, and there was sufficient food for them to survive. Mm-hmm. And so it was all God's plan. Mm-hmm. You know, just like he has a plan in the Bible to redeem mankind through, you know, his own son. Mm-hmm. And you see all these evidences and things pointing to Jesus throughout the prophecies, even in Genesis, you know, with Abraham almost having to kill his own son, and that God allowed his own son to die on the cross, Jesus, but he rose from the dead and conquered death, and so we now have salvation through Jesus. You know, that's what the Bible's about. It's a love story.
Amen.
It shows how we all sin, but yet God loves us so much that he did that for us. He died in our place. He took our penalty that we'd all deserve. And so it's amazing when you look at the geology to see the scars of this judgment, the scars of the flood, but yet God, even then, he offered a way out for people if they got on the ark.
Yeah.
Only eight people were on the ark. out of maybe a billion people in the world. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, Jesus has now become that ark. He's opened the door. He's opened the door of salvation. Mm-hmm. And so we all can be saved. He's waiting for more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I love that gospel tie-in because, you know, when we look at the fossils and the devastation that happened during the flood, it's a message of judgment, of destruction. And yet it's also a message of hope because we know that there will be a judgment day. And yet all who walk through the door of salvation by trusting in Jesus as Savior will be saved from that judgment. God will never flood the earth again. And yet we know that we have ultimate eternal life in Him. And so I just thank you for tying that in because I think that's really important to note. And, you know, as far as this unconformity that we see that's titled the Great Unconformity, because it is so global and it's so famous, especially in Grand Canyon, do we see other maybe smaller or just other lesser known unconformities elsewhere?
Well, there's, as I mentioned earlier, between every of these, you know, the mega sequences, there's an unconformity because the waves are coming in kind of big packages of sediment. Each mega sequence is like a lot of sedimentary rocks and a series of waves, apparently, of, you know, like a series of tsunami waves. In this case, maybe thousands of them all coming in over the course of a week or two, maybe even more, maybe in a month. So a big, huge surge of water coming in. Maybe because the seafloor was really pushing up a lot faster, a lot harder, whatever the case is, and it caused a lot of water to bring a lot of sediments and a lot of erosion. But initially, as those waves came in, it eroded, it looks like every time. Mm-hmm. Just like the Great Unconformity started with erosion. Mm-hmm. Then you have deposition on top of that immediately because there's no time for, you know, river valleys to form and that sort of thing. So you see this evidence of rapid erosion, rapid deposition, rapid erosion, rapid deposition. And so there's different kinds of unconformities. Sometimes you have rocks that were tilted up during the flood year and sheared off, like some of the Precambrian sediments in Grand Canyon. Those would be called an angular unconformity because you have an angular difference of the rocks below and the rocks above, and you can see the surface. But usually that's not the Great Unconformity. The Great Unconformity is, you know, usually Precambrian crystalline rock in most cases and sediments above that are full of fossils. Mm. And so those are flood rocks on top of non-flood rocks, or, you know, again, some of the where the flood begins with when you have Precambrian sediments, it gets very confusing. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I didn't confuse the audience today too much, because the Great Unconformity is not simple either, but this explanation is simple. Mm-hmm. It all, you know, basically, the best explanation is the flood, not a global wide, you know, snowball Earth with glaciers everywhere, because when those melt away, we don't see flat surfaces. Mm. And their other explanations are just as faulty that they try to come up with. But most times, as I mentioned, when you're out there as a geology student or you're a student in school studying a geology class, they won't talk about the significance of the Great Unconformity other than, look, isn't this cool that you're now looking at rocks that are half a billion years between this, you know, brick and this brick? Mm. Say, But nobody goes, but Professor so-and-so, why is it so flat?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just... So as creationists, we point that out. I mean, what we see points us to a much bigger event, a much bigger erosional surface over a massive area all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then deposition immediately on top of that over a massive area that covered the world in many cases, or parts of the world, in every continent. How is that not global? How is that not caused by a global flood? I mean, it makes any other explanation pales by comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the bottom line is, you know, whether, you know, it's an evolutionary worldview or an old earth worldview where you're just inserting, you know, long ages into your story, it doesn't work with the Great Unconformity because ultimately we should be seeing the billions of years of erosion and we just simply don't. The fossils show, you know, a progressive nature of the flood. So do the rocks. And it very much fits the rapid nature of a global flood as we would expect because the Bible tells us.
And most of the old earth creationists, they just go with the older story because it's easier, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't think it through or they don't want to. I don't know why they accept the millions of years. I don't understand the billions of years of the earth just because that's what they're taught. That's all they know maybe. But there's a lot of creation books out there that have been telling them for years. The earth's young. That's what the Bible teaches through the genealogies. But they don't even seem to consider it. They just ignore us because we are a minority.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for many of our listeners, this is new information, you know, and you're taught the other side of it, which is, oh, well, this is formed over millions, billions of years. And you read about it in textbooks, you hear about it in just, you know, the media, and you don't see an alternative. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why we do at ICR mm-hmm. is so important, is because we're saying, no, the evidence in fact does point to very rapid deposition, mm-hmm. Very quick formation mm-hmm. of these layers. And as we would expect, it lines up with the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an encouragement to mm-hmm. all of our listeners and viewers.
God's word is true. Nothing mm-hmm. else to get out of this. God's word is true. There was a global flood mm-hmm. just thousands of years ago. Really, really occurred, and the rocks reflect that. It isn't like we're just saying that on blind faith. The rocks reflect that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's a wonderful note to wrap up this podcast mm-hmm. on. And just, okay. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Clary, for coming on. And, you know, I think this was just a rockin' podcast mm-hmm. all around.
All right. Thank you. That's good.
Literally.
That's really good.
So thank you so much for coming on today.
I'm glad to do it. Hopefully, our listeners will get some edification out of this.
Absolutely. Well, I know I did. And to all of our listeners and viewers, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Creation Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to like, subscribe, and share this episode with your friends and family so we can get the creation message out to as many people as possible. If you would like to receive the Creation Podcast a week early or our monthly podcast, creation.live, 2 weeks early, you can click the link in the description to become a member on YouTube or Patreon. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.